Matt, I know how you've struggled with this topic, and I think one of the first things I challenged you with was, can it possibly be somebody other than the Catholic Church involved? So my question for you today is, what do Catholics think that this means?
Okay. Catholics would apply this man of sin to several different things. One of their favorite applications is to Martin Luther. For obvious reasons. Yeah, they like to apply that to Martin Luther. And that's really the most popular position since he has been around. Yeah, that's what I found to be the case anyway.
And of other orthodoxies, like the Russian Orthodox Church has a similar structure. Mm-hmm. Now, do you say that that's included in the papacy because it's part of that system or modeled after it, or do you think it's only Catholicism, period?
Well, that's a good question. I did kind of hope somebody would ask a little bit about that. The Eastern Orthodox Church, which I would place the Russian Church under that kind of deal, would not apply to this in two reasons. First of all, they were part of the papacy until the 11th century. That's when the Eastern Church officially split from the Catholic Church. Now, there was not agreement between them ever that I know of. The Eastern and the Western were in rivalry to one another. But the Eastern Church did stay under that authority until the 11th century, basically, or technically anyway. And the second reason that I wouldn't count this, the Eastern Church as being the fulfilling of that prophecy, is because they recognized four patriarchs, according to Maddox, as a being of equal authority. I didn't know that before I studied this, but so they recognized four different people. And so I would see them as being kind of like I would see the Church of England or the Episcopalian Church as tailing off of the Roman Catholic Church.
Matt, actually, I think the Russian Church now has an American patriarchate, too.
Do they?
Five.
Yeah.
But
okay, I didn't know
that's
that.
Recent.
Well, Alex wrote his book a long time ago, I guess.
You know, we talked some about this several times, and about how, if this referred to the Roman Catholic Church, how it would fit with an interpretation of the Book of Revelation.
Uh-huh.
Now, if I understood what you said, according to verse 8, then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming, is an indication that the man of sin will continue until Christ comes and destroys him.
Yeah.
And so, that would be saying, according to this view, that this refers to the papacy, that the papacy will continue in some degree of power until Christ comes. You know, I don't know that that conflicts with, for instance, the view Frank took yesterday of the Book of Revelation, a kind of a historical background, I think is what he called it. And because in that indication, the Roman Empire was the main focus of that, of the Book of Revelation, and then, of course, has the telescope to the end. And this would simply be a separate prophecy about a different event altogether, seems to me like that. So that the two would synthesize together.
I think so. What I learned about all of that is that when I first started this study, I thought the position you took on 2 Thessalonians 2 would probably be the same position you'll take on the Book of Revelation. And I've learned that may not be the case. And for some of the very reasons Alan is talking about. Revelation is written as describing pictures. And so, 2 Thessalonians 2 isn't. It's written talking about things Paul had already told them that they already knew. For that reason alone, they would be different to some degree. But this position wouldn't necessarily conflict with Frank's position, I don't think.
Frank?
When you were talking about this, and I thought it was a good presentation, you mentioned the temple as having a spiritual application is in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said the Pope does set himself up in the temple. What is there any strange implications about the Catholic Church that come up with that? He did at the beginning obviously set himself up in the church that was drifting away, but we obviously don't see today the Catholic Church to be the temple. What do you think about that?
The temple, as I understand it, would be the area in which God is supposed to have reign, in which he's supposed to have rule. And within that area, over the spiritual lives of men, he sets himself up as God. And so it doesn't necessarily have, in my opinion, to deal with specifically with the true church, but with the spiritual reign that God is supposed to have within the church.
All right, thanks.
Okay.
Brother Little.
If we look in the Americana Encyclopedia, the Catholics have put Peter erroneously as the first pope and list him from 31 A.D. to 67 A.D., putting his death, dying in the reign of Nero, because Nero reigned from 54 A.D. to 68. Now, we all know that Peter is not the first pope. But the second pope, and I forget what his name was, they list from 67 on. So we can see that according to them, and this is in the encyclopedia under popes, beginning with 67 A.D., so I just want to say that. But according to Revelations, the son of perdition, and like you said, there was only two. One was Judas, and the other, I believe, to be the papacy, are going to exist until Christ returns, when he's going to be destroyed at the brightness of his coming. That's all I can say.
Just about that, this succession idea, it's kind of interesting. That idea became very popular during the time just before the fall of the Roman Empire. Pope Leo, who was called the first pope by many, really was the bishop of Rome, and he really pushed this idea a lot. And so, and then people such as like Eusebius has gone back and traced a lot of that too. So they make a big deal about tracing the papacy all the way from the time of Peter till the present. So thank you for that.
Marcus.
Great job. I'm a little confused, I think, on the idea of the restrainer.
Okay.
Verse 6 and 7, could you explain
sure.
the role of that?
Sure. The way that the Roman government operated as the restrainer is by keeping the Bishop of Rome from asserting himself as all-powerful. Attempts by the Bishop of Rome to do this are seen very early in history. He thought of himself, the bishop did oftentimes, as being more powerful than the government would allow him to be. And so the first way it restrained, of course, was by the persecution that took place till the time of Constantine. But when Constantine made that government, the religion of the government, the Christianity, that took away the persecution. But something interesting about that is he is, the Roman emperors from that time until the fall of the Roman Empire were the ones responsible for the councils. And so through the councils that took place until the fall of the Roman Empire, they exercised their power, keeping that pope from being all-powerful. And so basically they would keep the pope from asserting himself, from accomplishing his seating himself in the temple as God. Does that answer your question a little better? Okay.
Matt, when we're talking about the restrainer being the Roman Empire, we're not necessarily saying, and presumably you're not saying at all, you're not saying the Roman Empire is a good guy here.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Just that he's keeping the problem from becoming a religious problem.
In all reality, he is under the sovereignty of God. Because even though he's a bad guy, he still operates for God's purpose. God's will was for him not to be revealed until a certain time. And so kind of like the way he used Nebuchadnezzar, the bad guy in the Old Testament, to accomplish one of his tasks, he uses the Roman Empire now to accomplish the task of keeping the restrainer, or keeping the man of sin from being revealed until the appointed time.
I wanted to ask you this, Matt. Verses 10 through 12, when it talks about people who do not love the truth and who have pleasure in unrighteousness, and God will send them a strong delusion, would this position that you've taken, would that mean that that would only apply to Catholics?
No, because in verse 12, I think it makes this an universally applicable principle, that it was definitely true with those that were a part of this apostasy, but all will be condemned who don't believe the truth.
Good answer.
Sorry, Matt. Hey, now let's just go along with what you have there. But is it possible that, like Frank's position on Revelation, you have additional groups that will continue to fit this very pattern until the end of time? For example, the Mormon Church started on the East Coast with Joseph Smith, who proclaimed himself to be God, in that he claimed inspired writings. Every word he wrote was inspired, including the fact that he wanted multiple wives. That worked until Utah wanted to become a state, and our United States government refused to allow Utah to become a state until they would do away with that doctrine, which is when multiple marriages for Mormons moved to the celestial kingdom instead of the earthly, therefore reacting as a restrainer. So, and I'm confident that even among the Muslim world, there would be some parallels, but just use the Mormon one as an example. Do you think that can fit this, and that there are others besides this?
Specifically, no. I don't think it can. I don't think those are fulfillments of this prophecy. In principle, there are probably similarities between the two, but I see this specifically applied only in the Catholic Church. With Joseph Smith, you know, the problem would be, what was the mystery of lawlessness that worked in that time that produced that false religion? And if you can answer that, then you have to answer, well, what was a restraining force that worked in the time of Paul that kept it, that religion, from occurring until the time of Joseph Smith, and then was taken out of the way? So specifically, I wouldn't see that as a fulfillment of this prophecy, but I think there are similarities between the man of sin and Joseph Smith. I think those are pretty clear.
Danny?
Matt, thanks for the study. In verse 7, we're told, for the mystery of iniquity doth already work. How was that transpiring at that time? And do you think that in Revelations 2 and 15, where the doctrine of the Nicolaitans was mentioned, that that had anything to do with it?
It possibly did. Since I don't know what the doctrine of the Nicolaitans was, I don't know specifically how it would have applied to this whole situation. I think, like I mentioned a moment ago, 1 Timothy 4 is a pretty good example of the ministry of lawlessness working in that time, where they were forbidding the eating of meats and of marrying, that sort of thing. And basically this defection from truth that was taking place within the church, and I would say in almost every way, was the way the mystery of lawlessness was working then.
Well, some of the scholars think that doctrine of the Nicolaitans may have been the development of a lord over the church, because that was kind of the meaning of that term Nicholas, the name that doctrine was named after. Uh-huh. And so
Some think that it was the beginning of the development of that.
Well, that may have been. I had not read about that. So
that's the reason why it was condemned by the Lord personally.
Well, that would have been a good reason to condemn it. But I don't know. I didn't read about that very much.
Explain a little bit about how that God-sending strong delusion works.
Well, okay. I think Romans 1 is a pretty good example of that, of how he does that. And basically the way it works is that when you make the choice to deny your knowledge in favor of ignorance, God causes upon you to come natural consequences. And so it is contingent upon your action, and as a result of the action of the individual in reaction to the truth, if they deny it, then upon that God sends this delusion.
So God doesn't choose to do that to me.
Right.
It has to do with my reaction to the truth.
And which is why I think it's such a good example of how the justice of God works. Instead of how God's injustice works, which I don't believe exists.
Well, does he actively then try to deceive me?
No, no. The only way the strong delusion is sin is if you react to the truth by denying it. And this truth, incidentally, according to Romans 1, is available to everyone. It was made known, by, according to verse 20, by his eternal power and by his Godhead, or by eternal power and the deity that is evident in the earth. And so by denying, for example, being an atheist would be an example of this, and God to them would send a strong delusion, a reprobate mind. So it's contingent upon your reaction to the truth.
Very good.
Okay.
Now, Matt, on a little follow-up on that.
Okay.
When the person has evidenced his not having a love for the truth, or is despising the truth, and he's evidenced his love, his pleasure in unrighteousness, then God actively sends the song. But he doesn't initialize the process.
No.